Freedom is just another word for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A podcast that casts pods all day, every day. Years ago, he learned how to make a small fortune in Medicare insurance. Start out with a large fortune. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, everybody. It's Medicare for the Lazy Men podcast, but you probably already knew that. It's a warm, cloudy, starting to get cold Illinois day in October, and I am looking forward to coming out to Arizona to join Randy in person. He promises to have a whole bunch of Guinness stocked up, and I think he and I will be indulging in some of that when I first hit the state of Arizona. That's going to be sometime next month, most likely. Anyway, we are here, as Drew McMillan, my Canadian nephew, just told you, to talk about Medicare. I don't know exactly what he said to you, but I'm sure it was a very complimentary comment on my being your Medicare expert. I am here to help people feel good about crossing over from Obamacare into Medicare. It should be it should be a comforting time of life, because basically what you're going from is medical insurance that may or may not be satisfactory to you, but it's probably way too expensive, to Medicare, which is going to be not very expensive and should be probably better coverage. It's all based on my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, which is available at Barnes & Noble, as well as Amazon.com. There is a paperback version, Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. There is an Audible version, and there is the ebook version, the Kindle version. And I haven't told Randy this yet, but yesterday I ran a little promo. I said, anybody who wants a free version of my book starting at midnight Monday to the end of the day at like 11:59 p.m. Monday, so that 24 hours, anybody going to Amazon could get the Kindle version free of charge. Now, normally, somewhere between 30 and upwards of no more than 130 people have snatched that offer up. About a year and a half ago, I ran it, and it was in one day, 651 books went out the door, and I was pretty happy about that. I haven't told Randy this, but yesterday I ran it expecting the same result, somewhere between 30 and 100, and it was 2,407 books that went out the door.
Holy bananas.
I know, that's what I was saying all night long. I was going, can this possibly continue? I don't know of any author that sold 2,407 books in one day. Now, this wasn't selling, I have to say. It was giving away, but somehow it struck a chord with people.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, as you said, you've done that in the past, and it was surprising, and it continues to get more surprising, but it just tells you what kind of pent-up demand there is.
There must be. So I'm hoping that you and I have a chance to get to know a lot of these people better as they contact us for Medicare assistance in enrolling in the Medicare plans that we recommend as the best for most people. So anyway, I was pretty excited about that. The two things that put me in a good mood today, the prospect of going to Arizona coming up in a month or so, and the fact that 2,407 people wanted to get a copy of my book. So I'm pretty happy about that. Not so happy when I look out the window at the Illinois weather, because it looks like it's wintertime. It's not. I can still see leaves on the trees. Randy's looking over my shoulder at the at what he thinks is like the windows of a yacht. but it's going to be snowy out there before you know it, and I don't want to be here when that happens. So anyway, Randy has joined us. Hello, Randy. How was your weekend?
Oh, my weekend was pretty good. I obviously, they're never long enough, but we had birthday parties to attend and people to see and things to do. So it was kind of a busy weekend, but it was fun. I know this is going to be a major surprise to you, but I occasionally just want to hold up in my house and do my own thing.
You?
I know it's amazing, but I just want to hold up in my house and do my own thing. But that didn't happen this last weekend. How about your weekend?
Yeah. Well, it's the same kind of thing. I'm hauled from one place to another. And basically, actually, that happened the weekend before. So I got a little respite this past weekend. And then the coming weekend, we're booked up again. So I'll be hauled around by my nose, you know, come over here. Now say hello to this person. Now say hello to that person. And, pretty soon, I feel like the presidential seal.
Yeah, that's right. Say hello, Doug. Say hello. Oh my goodness. So anyway, that's funny. So
if that's the worst we have to complain about, then I'm not going to be too upset.
You know, I guess that's right. It could be worse. Could be a lot worse.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it has been.
I think we should get down to some business, huh?
Let's do that. And I wanted to ease into, it's been a while since we recorded because we took one day off. So it's been about a week since we were in front of our microphones. And I ran across an article about procrastination. And it's a shorty, but it's always been a problem. I know when I learned how to procrastinate, and it was early in my academic career, and it really caused my academic career to not go as smoothly as I would like to have had it go. It was in second grade, and in Wayne School in Wayne, Illinois, we had a teacher, started out the teacher, I think she was the mother of a kid in the school, and she got sick or something happened. I don't know, maybe, you know, the show The Millionaire was on, so maybe she inherited money or something, but all of a sudden there was a string of substitute teachers in the middle of the year before they found a permanent replacement. And during that period of time, I learned that if I did not do the difficult tasks that second graders at Wayne School were assigned, that somehow you could probably skate. And that was not the type of knowledge that leads to a highly successful student. And in fact, it led to a very kind of a lackluster academic career. And when I finally finished college many years later, I was so happy to be out of academia that I couldn't see straight. So I know when all that started. It was when I was in second grade at Wayne School. So I found this little article about procrastination, and it brought to mind the fact that I talk to a lot of people about Medicare coverages. Some people say, hey, I want Medicare coverages. I want you to sell them to me. And I want to start 3 months before I'm going to retire. And I say, great. What's that date? That date is 2028. And I say, wait a minute. Why are we talking about it now? You only need to contact me 2 or 3 months ahead of your retirement date. Well, I want to get started ahead of time. Now, there's that kind of person. And then there's the other kind of person, more like me, who calls me up. And I just had a conversation about an hour ago with a person who called me from Jackson, Wyoming. And he said, okay, I have retired. What do I do? And I had a guy last week who actually retired in February. And he said, I said, what have you done for health insurance since then? Well, I was kind of getting ready to talk to you. So he has actually procrastinated his way into an uninsured situation over the course of most of 2021. And we finally, you know, whipped it into high gear and we got his paperwork done and he is now covered. But he could have, you know, kissed a bus or gotten run over by a train or fallen off a cliff or something and been his family would have been up the creek because he had no health insurance, not Medicare, not anything from his prior employer. And so there you've got both kinds of people. Some procrastinate, some start out doing these difficult projects way ahead of time. So this little article is what's the delay? 5 reasons that you procrastinate. There's a big red mark on your calendar. Project due. You've devised a plan, composed a checklist, and resolved to stay on schedule, but you don't. Is it a character flaw? Is it laziness? Were you born this way? Your tendency to procrastinate might be due to a condition such as attention deficit disorder or anxiety, And you can get help for that, says this professor of psychology at DePaul University. He is the author of Still Procrastinating, the No Regrets Guide to Getting It Done. To learn more, he says, check out a video on staying sharp. It's called Your Brain on Procrastination. But anyway, here is the synopsis of the article. There is a more likely explanation. Your procrastination is a learned behavior that you might have picked up for multiple reasons. Here are five common underlying causes. One is delusions about deadline pressure. You might think you do your best work under pressure, but studies show that chronic procrastinators make more errors under time pressure than those who don't procrastinate. Number two, fear of failure. Whether you're afraid of letting down yourself or others, this kind of fear can be paralyzing. Number three, sounds like the polar opposite, fear of success. The added responsibility that comes with success scares some procrastinators into delayed action. Perfectionism, number four, wanting to do a great job leads some people to avoid acting until the last minute. And number five, poor time perception. Procrastinators often have a hard time estimating how much time a task will take. If you're a procrastinator, time management tools alone won't do the trick. Instead, cognitive behavioral therapy, working with a therapist to change the way you think and behave, is the most promising approach since procrastination. Now, this guy says that because, it's the most promising approach since procrastination can be unlearned. Of course, this guy would say that because he is a psychologist and he would like you to visit him as a paying client. But I am not recommending that. I am recommending starting unpleasant tasks and finding out more often than not that they're not going to be as bad as you thought they were when you were procrastinating. So
I thought about reading his book, Doug. I haven't yet, but I thought about it.
You're not a procrastinator by any chance, are you?
On some things, yeah. On some things I am.
Well, I don't know. It just seems like every time we get together, you're always going, well, I had to do this and I had to do that. And it's almost kind of like, I wish I didn't have to do all that stuff, but I didn't know whether you are a procrastinator. You always do my stuff right away.
Well, I tend to do my favorite stuff first. It's like when I was a kid at the dinner table, you could always tell, okay, this is going to tell a lot of insight into Randy that people will pick up on. Okay, so I'm an IT specialist, okay? I'm a software engineer, so I like everything in its place, doing what it should be doing. I'm very logical. So when I serve myself at a dinner table, I put things around the plate my food cannot touch.
Oh, really? You're one of those, huh?
Yes. So, and then when I'm eating my dinner, you can always tell what I like best is because I leave it for last.
Well, I can understand that. I do tend to keep I've got TiVos everywhere. My life is full of TiVos. I have three houses. I've got TiVos everywhere. Everywhere there's a television, there are a couple of TiVos at minimum. And the shows that are left on my TiVos the longest are the shows that I enjoy most. And the shows that get watched first are the ones that I am marginal on, or I'm only recording them because the spousal unit asked me to.
Yep. No, I know. I totally get it.
On the other hand, my food can touch and I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Well, what really turned me off with food touching? Okay. You know, I was born and raised on a ranch. Okay. So during the busy season, we would have hired men. And most of the time, part of their wages is they get lunch.
Yeah.
And sometimes supper. So anyway, I don't know what there is about hired men, but they come into the house to get their lunch. And they get a plate and they just start piling stuff on top of one another. It was just like a mountainous pile of something.
Okay.
And then they would eat it.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought that was so wrong.
It sounds a little crass.
It was illogical and crass, a little bit crass. But in my little mind, it was so totally illogical because I liked those plates at school that had the dividers.
I understand. It keeps your life more organized.
Yes.
But I'm okay with my food touching to some extent because I remember my mother telling me one time, well, you know, this tastes pretty good with that. So if you take a bite of this and a bite of that, and they all wind up in the same mouth being chewed up. So now I have to take a bite of each item you know, a small mm-hmm. bite, and I wind up with everything in my mouth at one time. So I figure they're going to touch at some point.
I'm a rebel. I was told that my whole life. Never did I ever try anything dumb.
Well, like Pee Wee Herman is a loner yeah. and a rebel. He's a well. Anyway, we all have our little quirks, and I certainly have more than my share, so I understand yours completely. Okay, more Medicare. We haven't really had enough Medicare going on yet. People are going to say, I want a refund because I haven't had enough Medicare knowledge today. And I've got this article that's about 10 pages long. I'm not going to read all of it, but it struck me. We talk about Medicare, and people of Medicare age love the idea of Medicare because, frankly, the government pays the vast majority of the costs, and it is a money loser for the economy. It is a big drag on the economy. But when you're in Medicare, you don't think about that. You only think about how much more stuff can I get for free. And I've got an article here by Joseph Minarik, Minarik, very long, cerebral article. But basically, I'm going to read the first part and the last part. And he says, if you want a friend in Washington, D.C., get a dog. If you want to lose your friends in Washington, D.C., talk about Social Security or Medicare. I feel free to write this only because I have no friends left. He says, what's right with Medicare? Many, probably not all, people who believe that Medicare can, in fact, must be improved, are fully aware that the program has accomplished its major objective. And it is essential. They say so clearly. Nobody listens. And those who recommend any change are accused of heartlessness towards their own parents and every other elderly American, or worse. But after multiple attempts at even-handed discussion, I have nothing left to lose. And completeness requires one more try at articulating the positive as well as the negative. So here is what's right about Medicare. If left to fend for themselves, far too many elderly could not obtain health insurance coverage and eventually would be impoverished by out-of-pocket costs or possibly even left without care. The Medicare guarantee changed that. Terminating that guarantee is unthinkable. Okay, I'm going to take a little aside here. I disagree with this completely. My clients contact me because they are responsible enough to enroll in Medicare and then to buy Medicare supplement insurance to cover the gaps and the flaws in Medicare coverage. So I disagree that if left to fend for themselves, too many elderly would not obtain health insurance. People still have to enroll in Medicare. Now, if they're incompetent, somebody has taken them under their wing and helps them enroll in Medicare. But Medicare enrollment is not automatic, and it has to be done, with a purpose. You have to actually contact somebody in the government to begin the enrollment process. So this gentleman is wrong when he says that without Medicare, too many people would not be covered. I say everybody has to take action to get Medicare. And then he goes on to say, why even broach the subject? The care that our elderly get from Medicare could be a lot better. And, I disagree with him about that because I think the care under Medicare is pretty good. Like all things, you have to choose your care provider, your doctor, your hospital, carefully in order to get the best possible treatment. But that's on you, the patient, if you have the freedom of choice of having a Medicare supplement plan. So this guy says the care that our elderly get from Medicare could be a lot better. He says the rising cost of Medicare is the primary driver of our long-term budget problem. I agree with him about that. It is a huge drain on the budget. It could have been set up entirely differently, but it wasn't. It was set up as though the government owns an insurance company. It is a monopoly, and the cost of providing the coverage is not borne by the insured people like it would be in the private sector, but it is borne by the government for the most part. So he says a deal to fix the long-term problem is both unthinkable and impossible without reform of Medicare. And on the basis of potentially misleading information, many have come to think that we can ignore the program's rising costs through procrastination. Where have we heard that word? Though procrastination might come back to haunt us later. So what's wrong with Medicare? He says the cost of treating each individual Medicare beneficiary has been growing faster than our gross domestic product. He says that cannot continue indefinitely, but the problem is compounded because the Medicare beneficiary population is growing faster than the population at large and is likely to continue to do so indefinitely and at a rapid rate for the next quarter century or so in sum, or perhaps in product. I don't know what that means, or perhaps in product, because the two unsustainable rates of growth are in effect multiplied by each other. The math simply doesn't work. Medicare cost growth has slowed somewhat for a few years. More on that later. Well, anyway, he's talking about the cost of providing medical services to a rapidly aging population. And yep, that cost is going to go nowhere but up. But his plan for reducing the impact of that cost on the overall economy, I think, is a flawed plan, and it's not reasoned well. He says, so what should we do? His little think tank has come up with some plans, but they're all based on building on the Medicare Advantage plan model. And I don't believe that is, Randy almost had a heart attack. Somebody should pound on Randy's chest, get his heart going again. Anyway, the whole thing is that, where was my line here? He was talking about the fact that his little group of brainiacs think that the best way to improve the delivery of medical services in a more cost-effective way is to build on the Medicare Advantage model. And I disagree with that. And then he launches into a whole thing about the existing Medicare Advantage plans. 27% of all beneficiaries were enrolled in 2012, and that number has grown. They had a choice of 22 plans, and therefore they can compete on the basis of adding additional bells and whistles of coverage. They don't compete on cost because most of them are pretty cheap. So if instead those plans could offer the same coverage as traditional Medicare at a lower price, their little think tank believes that there would be more vigorous competition that would reduce healthcare costs, bending the cost curve. Well, first of all, Medicare Advantage plans are not freedom of choice. And what I offer people is freedom of choice. And there's a certain segment of the population that does not want to be locked into an HMO or a PPO network of providers, having to pay the full cost of any treatment if they go outside that network. That is just not going to work for a lot of people. So he goes on to say, why is it so hard to achieve a common sense reform? Let's leave aside pure demagoguery. Tell today's elderly that they will have their health care taken away, even if the change starts a decade from now, and only then for new enrollees, and think about some practical hurdles. So I think what he's saying there is you don't want to be saying that to people. It's a political loser if you tell them Medicare is going to come to an end at some point in the future. Congressional budget scoring is one of those hurdles. Selling an idea requires demonstrating that it will, in fact, save money. But in the words of Adam Smith, the father of all U.S. economists, the reform, not U.S. economists, us economists, that's not capitalized. So Adam Smith is the father of all economists, but I think he was English. So he said this reform would put the invisible hand of competition to work to slow the growth of healthcare costs. But how do you measure the invisible hand? Well, you can't, because it's invisible. So no one knows how much competition will hold down costs for cars, computers, or haircuts over the next 10 years. And that's the way government measures the cost of their programs, with typically a 10-year forward-looking estimate of the cost. So we certainly don't know how much competition would save in healthcare over the next 10 years. To prove savings under such uncertainty, most proposals for competition in Medicare include a cap on costs with automatic increases in premium or reductions in reimbursements where possible. I think that's the death knell. You want doctors to be highly motivated. If you cap premiums or if you reduce reimbursements, then you're going to have providers of services that are not highly motivated to do their best. And you're not going to attract the best providers. You're not going to attract the most skillful surgeons or the best doctors if you're limiting their earning potential. Now, that's just Doug Jones, Boy American, talking here. That is not part of the article, but it tells me that this is not a well thought out plan of attack that these people are looking for. And I hear the same sort of faulty role from some political parties. They want to nationalize the delivery of health care, not health insurance, but health care. They want to pay for it like the Canadians do. And I know for a fact that that just makes the doctors wage slaves, and it reduces their incentive to excel. And so overall, I think talk like that is dangerous. And if we are going to make any changes in our national provision of health insurance and health care to older people, which we call Medicare, I think the way to do that best is to change the way it's paid for, to privatize even a larger share of it. I think the product that I sell, Medicare supplements, is an excellent example of that privatization. And not to beat a dead horse, but there are several plans that are nationalized. The Medicare supplement plans are the same from one company to the next, but the prices are not the same from one company to the next. And there is one plan that almost nobody but me ever talks about, and that is because they don't make enough money when they sell that plan. But it's the only plan I talk about. It's where I begin my conversation with a prospective client, and that is high deductible plans, or as Randy calls them, high value plans. Those are the plans that have the most bang for the buck, and those are the plans that I lead my clients to. Now, they don't all go for them, but at least I want them to understand how you can save a ton of money by taking on a little bit of risk. So I think this guy is barking up the wrong tree when he talks about big, huge ideas for saving money with Medicare. I think there are easier, cheaper, and less intrusive ways to do that. So Randy's looking at the clock, wondering where I got my my energy to keep talking this long. I bet we've gone over 50 minutes, right?
I think we better take a lunch and come back for part two. No, I was just wondering, you know, whenever Medicare Advantage comes out of the discussion here, I always cringe just a little bit, but
I saw you cringing.
Yeah. Obviously, this guy has a very different opinion of your opinion. And I would say that most of what he proposes as a solution is really not a solution. It's just an expansion of the crap we've got now with Advantage plans.
I agree. That's what I read in this article. So I'm putting this on my pile of things to throw away, because I think it's mistaken to involve the government and managed care even further in our lives. Why let intrusive things occur when freedom is our goal?
That's right. And they didn't even talk about Joe Namath. Where's Joe Namath at? Come on,
I heard
you can't have an Medicare Advantage plan without Joe Namath someplace.
I wish I had thought of this, but I listened to another podcast where the podcaster said, and now we have Jimmy J.J. Walker, who obviously went to the Joe Namath school of acting.
Now, I'm not besmirching Jimmy J.J. Walker, but you know what he's not?
What is me?
He's not an insurance expert, okay?
Well,
he's reading a script.
But he did go to the Joe Namath School of Acting, because he throws his arms around just like Joe does.
I thought maybe he had his check sticking out of his shirt pocket.
Yeah. Well, that would be where I would put it, because frankly. But anyway, you're absolutely right. We should go away and leave the people alone. Stop bothering people. What do you think?
Oh, I think we probably better close shop for this afternoon. You've got me all fired up, so I need to cool down before we leave. But anyway, let's go ahead and pull her into the station. We're running out of steam anyway. So anyway, I want to thank the people, but before I go out for good this afternoon, I want to encourage them to remember a couple different things for me. One is, Doug Jones is the best insurance guy you'll ever meet. And he does sell insurance, for those of you who were wondering. And go to Amazon.com, get yourself some books as we get closer and closer into the holiday season. I would certainly stock up, because they're your best piece of information around the sign-up process for Medicare supplement plans, all that good stuff. They are your claim to fame for that type of information, as well as if you like the color version of it, you can go to Barnes & Noble, or you can get the audio. Well, Doug was talking about the audio version earlier, and you can also get the Kindle version at the same place, Amazon.com.
Well, we kept the elves busy all last night replenishing the supply of Kindle editions of the book. 2,407 of those things walked out.
Oh, my, that is amazing. And it is just, it makes my day. So anyhow, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma and the new world record holder for one day downloads for a book at Amazon.com.
Bye-bye.